Let's go.
You're listening to Making Data Simple, where we make the world of data effortless, relevant, and yes, even fun. Go.
Podcast listeners, this is Al Martin. I'm having some fun in the sun today listening to the podcast. And the podcast I'm listening to is a continuation from last week, which is part two of two sales experts walking into a bar. Those experts are Frank Attai, GM Technology, IBM Canada, and Matt Kaczynski, VP of Data and AI and Automation Sales for IBM Americas. You're going to love this one. Enjoy. Bye-bye.
What is the best manner to address an individual that's not achieving their quota?
There's a luxury I have because I've got a great leadership team where if I'm having a discussion with a rep where that's the case, I don't go into, you know, you can't not make your quota two quarters in a row, right? I mean, I go into understanding the situation they're in. What accounts do they have? Are their accounts white space accounts? Like, again, it goes back to that preparation, right? So I try to collect as much information to figure out why they're probably in that spot. I never want to undercut their manager, right? Who's probably already working to coach with them. So I'll more collect data at that point, Al. I'll talk to the FLM and say, I talked to Joe. We'll change the name of the subject. I'm using Joe quite a lot today, but I talked to Joe and here's what I gathered. I think these are a few things that we can help arm Joe with, right? So we're not in the same discussion next quarter, right? So I think that's a core part of it. The days of, you know, that guy already knows he didn't make his quota two quarters in a row. I don't need to keep emphasizing it at my level. I want to be there to figure out the problem and help solve it with his leadership team.
And is there a time where, you know, what is the time where somebody, you know, maybe they're not best suited for the role that they're in? I don't know.
Yeah, it's tough to time box it, but clearly if it's a continued, let's say, issue, and once the suggestions are provided to the individual and they're not putting in maybe that same level of preparation or effort to apply some of those, then, you know, it's a responsibility of the business and their teammates, right, to figure out the right place for them if sales isn't it.
Yeah, this is where I'm going to treat the sales organization like we were using a sports analogy before. I use another sports analogy, which is this is a professional sporting franchise. And in the franchise, you've got players, and people like to blame the players, but you also have trainers and you have coaches, you have general managers, and you have presidents. And sometimes you've got what we call a specialty tool. I'm going to use these Canadian analogies now. Do you know what a Robertson screwdriver is?
I don't know that I do.
Enlighten us.
But Al, I'm going to teach you that there's no X in an espresso. First of all, you said espresso at the beginning. It's espresso. My Italian mother is rolling over in her grave. But Robertson screwdriver is Canadian. It's a square head screwdriver. Okay. If I have a Robertson screwdriver and I'm trying to put in a screw that a flathead belongs to, it's not the screwdriver's fault, right? Like literally it's a fit for purpose tool. So part of it is when we're assembling teams, and Matt talked about his team, do we have the right person in the right job to solve the right problem? And if we do, and then the screw's still not going into the wall, I'm a big fan of root cause analysis. If something isn't working, well, why isn't working? And is the person coachable? Because if people that are coachable and desire to improve, we're always going to be able to fix the problem, right? So if root cause analysis is, and sometimes this happens, it's just not the right territory. Meaning we've put someone in an area where there's no relationships with IBM. Forget that for a second. They've bought all their technology from somebody else. They literally don't have a dime they could spend with us. Well, maybe it's not a problem with the individual. Maybe as a manager, we need to take that person and put them somewhere else. Or maybe the unique dynamics in their skill set or their approach isn't right. So until we get under, you know, what the root cause looks like, and by the way, we can determine ultimately, hey, listen, we put you in the right territory. We've done the right enablement. We've asked the right questions. That person just not is coachable and they're not a right fit. Then the best thing you can do is get them out of the job and get them somewhere else. And they'll be extremely happy with you because there's nothing worse than a seller. They can't be happy if they're not selling anything and they're not making any money. So it's best for everyone. And, you know, at the end of the day, but really we got to step back and ask ourselves the question, what is the root cause of them not being successful in the role?
That's a great answer. Thank you for that. I want to get to some differentiating in IBM. And there's so many questions I could ask you guys. We could go on. We're probably going to have a volume two at some point because I want to talk about training. I'd like to talk about where sales can or should be spending its money. I mean, there's so many tools. But before I move on, I know you guys to be very successful in selling. However, I'm going to ask you a tough question, and I'll just hope for who's brave enough to go first. And the question is what have you learned from one of your biggest sales failures?
Oh, well, I mean, I've had plenty, right? I think, you know, we're high on sports analogies today, but you know, I need to get away from Canadian sports or on the pitch and that kind of stuff. So, you know, I'm a Boston guy. So Bill Belichick, you know, everybody thinks he's very rigid and he doesn't tolerate failure and all this. You know, his coaching staff and players on his team, he's very accepting of failure, but once, right? So it's all about, you know, learning from it and not making the same mistake again. I would say some of my bigger failures were I tried to solve and do everything myself or with a very small group of people. A luxury at IBM is there are so many brilliant people, right, that want to have us be successful with our clients and it took me, you know, I actually failed at this a couple times earlier in my career, but I haven't recently, but I bring everyone to bear, right, that I think will provide value in any instance in the client, whether it's how do I convince the client that we are the choice to solve a problem? How do I convince a client or make them comfortable that they made the right decision and I've got some of the best technologists to bear to get them into production, right? So that was probably an area where I learned early on and it's helped me not make the failures is really leveraging the full breadth of the skill set within the four walls of IBM.
And it's interesting, and I was going to go in a similar place than Matt, so I'll make a comment, then I'll go in a different place, which is I think what he's talking about is so important, especially if you want to go from being an individual contributor to a manager, to a second line manager, to an executive, because you're never going to scale if you try to do everything by yourself. So I went through, and by the way, I still get stuck in it sometimes. I went through the same journey as Matt. I think the most valuable, and I've also failed plenty of times, if you're not failing, you're not learning, and you're not challenging yourself hard enough. Probably the most valuable lesson I learned is, I call it the tire kicker lesson, right? Which is you spend an inordinate amount of time on something, you know, where the dog just ain't gonna hunt. Sorry to say it that way. And you don't want to admit to yourself that you're either not focused on the right problem, you're not working with the right people. But I remember blowing better part of a year working really, really hard only for something not to come to fruition because I didn't qualify the opportunity and the client well enough. And there's an old saying, there's two good answers in sales, yes and no, okay? Yes, because it's compelling and it makes sense. No, because clearly there's no value proposition to move on. In between, our people spend an inordinate amount of time pushing on a rope or chasing something that's just not there. And part of it is constant qualification on with the client, with the problem statement and advancing, because not only do you not want to waste your time, you don't want to waste your client's time. And there are so many tire kickers out there in the market. What is a tire kicker? Someone who asks questions, but has no intention of doing anything, doesn't really have a big problem, but is just too polite to tell us to go jump in a lake, right? So I got to tell you, that was my number one lesson as an early rep in the company around asking hard questions and qualifying, not just at the beginning part of the journey, but through the middle and through the end. And then after we've sold something to make sure it gets deployed the right way.
What immediately would tell you that someone's a tire kicker and not a decision maker or going to be a decision maker?
You know, that is a tough one because some people, especially in my country, we're so polite, right? You know, the Canadians have this, you know, reputation of I'm so sorry and excuse me and pardon me. You know, typically, if they're not able to well articulate the criticality and the importance of, and Matt and I've got the same boss, and he's got these wonderful three or four questions, right? Which is, why does the client need to do it? Why do they need to do it, you know, with IBM? Why do they need to do it now, and what could go wrong? Okay. If you're client cannot answer those questions throughout the journey, you're dealing with a tire kicker. Okay. And most of them, because we're so polite in our country, are not doing it on purpose. Like really, they kind of lie to themselves as well. That's why all of those qualification questions and being honest with yourself, depending on the answers they give you, can determine whether, you know, you're wasting your time or your client's wasting their time.
Why is IBM better than anybody else? What's your pitch? Now, I know that's kind of open-ended. So let's say this, and you could answer it open-ended, but just to be a little bit more specific, let's say I'm a customer. I'm interested in like some visualization, some analytics for my repositories. Are my repositories in good shape? I don't know. That's your problem to figure out, whoever's going to come in and give me the analytics. But I know this. I'm working off spreadsheets. I don't know about my data fabric. Hell, I don't even know what that means. I've got a couple of competitors at IBM that pitch some good solutions. They're pretty. They give me the reports. Why IBM? Why should I think IBM?
Let me give you my 30 seconds on this. And I tell clients, so we've been in business for 105 years. We don't make cheese slicers or weigh scales anymore. What makes us the best in the marketplace is we endlessly and relentlessly reinvent ourselves and change where the market's going. And the other part of the reason I took a job in technology is because technology is not stagnant. It's constantly chasing. By the way, we don't always make the right bets, but we're bold and mature enough to pivot and make different decisions. Like I started in the PC company. By the way, the odd person at a party still asks me for a deal on a ThinkPad. And I'm like, guys, that's 2005, right? Like we're willing to recognize and evolve and change. And by the way, where sometimes we make a bet that doesn't exactly play out the way we want it to. I mean, like, think about this. We took 20% of our people in revenue and spun it off into a different business November 4th, okay? Because it was the right thing for that business. We weren't making the investment we needed to. We made a $34 billion acquisition with Red Hat a number of years ago. People thought we were insane. The business has doubled. Like, that is going from who we are to who we are and who we want to be, and the ability to relentlessly evolve and reinvent ourselves is really what makes this company different and the best, and it gives us the ability to transcend, you know, the last 105 plus years.
Yeah, and I think just to add on to what Frank said, those are all the great things that make us different. I think one of the things that stayed constant that our customers appreciate and why they come to us is the skills that we talked about earlier to solve those complex problems. Like if you go to a CIO or a CDO that has a very complex problem, they're only going to a couple companies, right? And luckily we're one of them. And it's because of the history of us to bring extremely qualified individuals to solve a problem. Having good products nowadays, it's table stakes, right? A lot of people do. It's bringing the skills to bear. To get more specific, Alan, your question, what has changed is I would not tell that gentleman that said, I've got a bunch of repositories, I've got visualization problems. I would not tell him what we could do for him. I would have understood the landscape and I would have went into that meeting to show him, right, how we would do it. So the difference, tell him, show him, right? And that goes back to the huge investment we've made in our P&L, I'd say starting 4 years ago, where we have data scientists, right? We have experts in cataloging data. We have experts in AI ops and dynamic resource optimization that are the best in the industry that are pro bono to work with the clients to diagnose that problem. And then in the first meeting, if possible, come to them and show our technology coming to bear, plus their skills to assist them to get there. That's the difference. So I talked about the constant and the difference, right? And I think that's where we really differentiate ourselves. And to the last piece of that, when I talked about earlier, I'm not a big replace guy. Like I haven't really talked to a client about replace so-and-so's widget for mine, because the problems, and especially what COVID's brought on, the accelerated digitization, right? Every client's got a problem and where we can augment what they've done. And going back to transparency, clients respect that, right? If I'm not going in there saying everything you've done is wrong, replace it with my stuff, and really addressing the problem and how they can augment, it goes a long way.
How would you answer somebody that came to you, Matt, and said, you know, IBM isn't sexy though, man. It's not sexy.
It goes back to that point. If I bring one of my data scientists in front of a customer, I just actually had the pleasure of Frank, longstanding relationship with a finance company in Canada, their CIO. Frank said, hey, these guys have been a great customer, but we got to get them on our new stuff because I think it can transform their business. Our new stuff, data science, ML ops, conversational AI, that's about as sexy as it gets, Al, right? So my team, me and Frank, got on with the CIO. I talked to the point of coaching before. He laid out their vision and what they're trying to solve. I talked for about 10 minutes, right, on how I thought we could help them there. And then immediately following, my data scientist, very sexy, he did a full end-to-end demo to show them how they could pull data from multiple repositories, catalog the data, produce models, automate them, and have a full government or governance and explainability of those models in 15 minutes, right? So we are sexy. If they don't believe it, Mr. Customer, we'll bring that team in, right? We've really invested in those types of skills to delight our customers.
Yeah, and by the way, the customer was blown away, Al, just so we're clear. You know, Matt is being being humble. Within a one-hour session, we covered so much ground and then live demonstrated functionality that could make a real impact to their business. They're in alternative lending, and alternative lending is very interesting, and we're going through a pretty interesting phase and raising interest rates globally and massive inflation rates and the materiality for a business like this. And for them to be able to, you know, using trustworthy AI and or taking all of their data to come together and diagnose and make decisions on the fly, like, it is the difference between either growing their business or mitigating potential epic risk as well. And you should have seen the reaction and the eyes go wide open. And this is on the fly, live demonstration, the intersectionality of business and technology. I got to tell you, right? Like, it's at the core of what every client does, whether you're in financial services or you're in government or healthcare or manufacturing or distribution. Everybody has bet their business on technology. Right. So whether you call it sexy or you call it essential, you know, when we do things right, companies will either be successful or not successful on the back of the right engagement with IBM.
So I want to add to the last question briefly. What can IBM do that no one else can do, period, that you found in the market right now that maybe there's some FUD out there or whatever? I don't know. But what can we do that nobody else can do?
It's a really interesting question, Al. I had another client, which coincidentally was a Canadian client. This was about a year ago, where the team prepared me to go into a discussion with him. And he literally stopped me 5 minutes in. He goes, Matt, regarding the technology we've already procured from you and different licensing models and new features you've added, I have full faith that IBM will do whatever we need to be successful around that. Those decisions we already made. I want you to tell me what IBM does better than anyone else. Now, for my particular business, I have the luxury of having multiple products in the leadership quadrant for Gartner, right? So I immediately start there. Based on the time in the podcast, I won't go deep into these, but conversational AI, right? Everybody's got a chatbot. That ain't what we do, right? Speech is very complex, right? We have deep skills in speech, end-to-end, enterprise-wide conversational AI, leadership position, and it's clear, right? It's not me saying it. It's the analyst saying it. ML ops, right? There are hundreds of platforms out there you can build models on, open source. I won't name names, but you know the vendors, right? There is no one that can do an end-to-end ML ops lifecycle like IBM based on the work that research did 3 years ago that we immediately productized to offer that to our clients, right? In the areas like AI ops, just briefly, right? The ability to do application performance management, dynamic resource optimization, and then embed Watson into it, right? For problem detection and immediate resolution, like, when you put those three legs of the stool, we call it, together, again, leadership position. So I could go on forever, But the work that our product teams have done has been amazing. That makes that discussion easy with clients on the leadership perspective. And I'm proud of what they've done.
I was going to say, Al, we're going to take the microphone away from Matt because Matt owns, you know, the biggest brands we have in the Americas. And I know he's passionate about each product. But listen, there's two answers, okay? At the micro level, and you're going to get the view from Matt and a lot of, his colleagues across there, because if we can't differentiate and do it differently globally, there's not the same value for clients. So we better be able to differentiate ourselves in a unique manner. Let me give you the macro view. I think that, and I said before, the intersectionality between business and technology, there is a fallacy out there that there's one system to rule them all. One product, one tool that you put in front of everything, and you don't need to worry about anything. And if you have one application and you only do one thing, that's, you know, that potential is out there. 99.9% of the world and our clients have a heterogeneous technology environment. They've made lots of different bets. Customer relationship management with Salesforce.com. Financial management with Oracle. Email with Microsoft. And the list goes on and on and on and on. We are the only technology company that recognizes and admits that this is a heterogeneous world. Okay? And when you bet your business on technology, these things have to come together in an orchestrated manner. And we've bet our company on the fact that because the world is heterogeneous, you need solutions that transcends each individual component, okay? And it's amazing to see the recognition now in the marketplace that people are pragmatic around the fact that they're going to have multiple cloud providers, multiple books of record, multiple automation and data standards, and we are the only one that can transcend and give our clients the ability, leveraging an open type approach to amplify and accelerate their business. And I do think that's absolutely unique in the market.
Very nice. I like how you guys answered it in different ways. Nicely done. Hey, look, I left a ton of questions on the table, a ton. However, is there any question that you wish I would have asked today that I didn't ask?
No, I'm surprised how many you got in, Al. Just to let you know, the only thing I'd say in closing is Frank and I are amenable to round two, but the fee is going to increase for sure, right? You're going to have to up that. I think what was lunch or something? It's going to have to definitely be dinner.
No, I can buy you off with alcohol. I'm sure of it. I'm positive.
Bourbon. Yes, yeah. Correct.
I had impression that this was going to be in the pub over a pint of Guinness or something. And here am I sitting in my office downtown Toronto. So, you know, it's kind of a bit of a bait and switch. But Al, you know, I'm with Matt. You asked a ton of great questions. I think we covered a lot of great material. But if we can do this next time over an adult beverage, that'd be great.
That'll take 2 hours and put it down to like 10 minutes by what we can use, I'm sure. Hey, you thought you were done. Not quite. I want to know what your day in the life looks like. Just a personal question or two, and then we'll close up shop. I mean, you guys are leaders of sales. How do you prioritize? Do you have a system? Do you have a management system, personal management system? I mean, what does a day for you guys look like that we could learn from?
So, yeah, I just think, you know, it comes down to a balance. So a day in Boston, not traveling, right? I try to stay fairly routine, right? So black coffee early, right? Start looking at various, you know, news feeds I get in my email that I'm curious to be current on. Around the market, around the world, et cetera. My 9-year-old daughter, school is literally 5 blocks down the street from her house, committed walker of her, right, to school. I'll keep going a little bit further beyond drop off. So I feel like I've gotten some cardio that day and I can tell my wife I did. And then kind of back into it, calls with clients, calls with the team. And then, you know, on a good day, I'm wrapping up the day when I'm home, coaching a kid's sport, doing art with my daughter. She's a big art fan, does some great stuff. And, maybe binging a little bit of cable news at the end of the day. Everybody would say, you know, that I go to bed reading a book. You know, I try to read more on planes. But when I'm home, that's kind of a day in the life. I'd call that a good day. And maybe even weave in that, you know, call to the reps to thank them for the work they're doing kind of during the lunch break. So that would be a good day and a perfect day for me. Don't happen all the time, but I try to be pretty regimented with that.
I try to be a ruthless prioritization and delegation kind of guy. Like, what does that mean? And this isn't just business, because like Matt, I've got two young boys. They're 11 and 13. If I'm not spending time with the family, it's a day wasted, right? I'm passionate about my team. I'm passionate about IBM, but ruthless prioritization, which means it's got to be in my zone of difference versus indifference. Because if I could be having breakfast with the kids or getting, like last night I went to my 11-year-old soccer game, I'm going to choose to do that. Now, if we have a massive outage on a critical platform with a bank, I'm going to miss the soccer game and I'm going to be upset about that. But that's prioritization. Picking up an email I could pick up the next day, I don't want to have my priorities mixed up. But in terms of business and the day on an average day, if I'm not spending time with clients, it's a day wasted, quite frankly, right? But if I step back and I have to do this on a regular basis in terms of what is going to make a difference for my business, for my family, and for my team, and then I look at my calendar and I kind of audit it on a regular basis to say, okay, I'm spending time with clients, I'm developing my teams, we're advancing the strategy, I'm not being an absentee father. If I do all of those things on a good day and I'm balanced, that's a great day. Occasionally what happens is your priorities get mixed up and you find yourself spending on times that are things that are quote unquote low value. That's a bad day. So it's a bit of a tricky dribble, or it's a balance, Al. But, you know, if I put the priorities for the family and the business first, usually it's a good use of the day and the time.
What do you do for fun, Frank?
Family. I'm a family guy. Like I was we joke, I was a pretty athletic guy once upon a time. And first it was rugby, and then it was golf. And then, you know, the kids came along. So for fun, we're pretty active. We try to do things outside. We try to travel. You know, now post-pandemic, we took our first vacation in a couple of years to the Orlando area about a month ago. So as much of the time as I could spend outside with the family and trying to do things active, that's kind of, what motivates me outside of the workplace.
What about you, Matt? What do you do for fun? And I don't want to hear about the Patriots. You know, they're done. The Chiefs, Chiefs are the new team. So anything besides Patriots?
Big sports fan. Picked up actually a lot of great hobbies, if you will, driven by my daughter, who I mentioned earlier. I do have a son, but like he's focused on sports. She's extremely artistic. She's literally taught me during the pandemic how to play the piano, right? Then I've recently purchased a guitar that's collected some dust, but she's picked up the guitar as well. I'm actually going to get a professional to teach me how to play the guitar, but she's started. So a big mix of sports and spending as much time as I can with my daughter, because as you guys know, when you have a first child, you get stuck with committed to everything with them. I'd say over the last year or two, I've really, really rotated to make sure I'm spending as much time with my daughter, and it's been quite rewarding.
Fender Play, man, look it up. That's what I would recommend. It's an app that you practice 10 minutes a day, but at least you get your fingers on the guitar. That's what I use. So at least you keep it going. It's amazing. As long as your fingers are moving, you will get better.
Awesome.
Not great, but you'll get better.
I wrote it down. We'll have a duel off at round two of this
That'll
thing.
That'll work. Hey, where can the listeners reach you guys?
LinkedIn, your local IBM representative, right? No, but LinkedIn's the way to go. I'm also available at mattkosi@us.ibm.com. And I'm a quick turnaround guy, so I look forward to hearing from anybody that's interested.
What about you, Frank?
Yeah, I'm a LinkedIn guy. You know, when I have my coffee in the morning, there's a few things I do, and popping up LinkedIn is part of my routine as well. So drop me a note on LinkedIn or drop me an email, and I check it almost every day.
You guys are fabulous to talk to. Thank you for being here. It's been a blessing. A lot of fun. I like the camaraderie you guys have. You can tell you guys work well together. Thank you.
Hey, appreciate it, Al. Just take that snippet for like those 20 seconds when Frank complimented me and send me that video, that audio separately. I'm going to use it for bribery go forward.
Thank you for listening. As always, rate us. Tell us how we're doing. If you'd like to be on, send us a note to almartincoxdata@gmail.com. Until next time, we will see you on the podcast. Later, guys. See you.